Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
So yesterday, I talked to you about the little Frankensteins we've created on college campuses. That's been the discussion all week. Look at these nutty kids. How did we get here? I've been trying to explain to you exactly how we got here. We created that. We indoctrinated them. We sent them to college campuses and created these little monsters. Today, I'm going to show you how we've done the exact same thing in the sports world. We've created Frankensteins of our professional and college athletes. We've pampered and coddled them and given them bad information for so long that they're now turning on us. Did you see Patrick Beverley, member of the Milwaukee Bucks? They got eliminated last night by my Indiana Pacers. Patrick Beverley got into a spat and threw a basketball twice at Pacer fans who were seated directly behind the bench. It's ugly. It's stupid. After the game, he shuts down a female reporter and everybody goes crazy and thinks the reporter, oh my God, it's terrible what happened to the reporter. But I want to show you, no, what's actually bad is what happened to the Indiana Pacer fans. And I want you to understand how we got here, the coddling process of professional athletes. I want to take you back. And again, the coddling started well before this. But I was telling you this in 2021 when I saw Doris Burke get upset and chastise a fan because Rajon Rondo acted disrespectfully towards a fan seated courtside, and Doris Burke, someone I like, but she melted down because, oh my God, Rajon Rondo, a fan did something inappropriate. Play the clip.
Happened with Rondo and the fan.
Oh. What is that guy? Are you kidding me?
So this was not any sort of spilled liquid. This was an interaction between Rondo and the fan, and after the cleanup, this happened. Of
not only should he, first of all, yes, you should escort him out. The guy shouldn't be allowed back in. You made physical contact with an NBA player in a courtside seat. Are you kidding me?
Rajon Rondo put his hands and fingers in a fan's face seated courtside, and the fan brushed his hand out of the guy's face. And Doris Burke wants the guy eliminated from the arena. And I called this out in real time in 2021. It's like we've lost the plot. The games are actually about the fans. The players are making millions upon millions of dollars. They should be held to the higher standard, not the fans. We've lost the plot. We've coddled kids and turn them into little monsters. I'm going to tie it all together. The college kids, the athletes in professional sports, we did this. The media, we need to cut it out and remember what our actual job is. That's today's Fearless. Welcome to Fearless with Jason Whitlock. I'm Jason Whitlock, your host. Happy Friday. Thanks for joining me. We have an awesome show planned for you today. Steve Kim's going to join me. We're going to get into this Patrick Beverley situation. And trust me, it's tied to a bigger picture about what's going on with our young people and how we got here. And this is across the board. It's not just in the sports world. This is across the board. If you want to understand why these college kids across America are doing the stupid things that they're doing, you can see it all right through the lens of sports. Our athletes have been doing this for years. And we've been allowing them to do this for years. Best thing you guys can do is make sure you're also checking out our extra Fearless content on Blaze TV. Go to blazetv.com/fearless. Use the promo code Fearless, and you can save $20 on your yearly subscription. The other thing you can do, thank our great friends at Good Ranchers. That's why I'm able to talk this way. This episode is brought to you by our friends at Good Ranchers. Good Ranchers is locking in your price until 2026. When you subscribe to any of their boxes of 100% American meat and seafood, use my promo code Fearless at goodranchers.com and save 10%. Steve Kim's going to join me in this conversation. A few other topics we want to get into about the sports world. But I want to start right here with Patrick Beverley. I think we should have video of Patrick Beverley throwing a basketball twice. The first time he hits a woman that's seated, I believe, in the second or third row. And then the second time he throws the ball hard at a man. And this is, Milwaukee's losing. They're getting eliminated from the playoffs. Patrick Beverley, 35 years old. He's been in the league a long time. He's a tough guy. He's a guy that I actually halfway liked. But he's just another Frankenstein. He's just another little monster that the American media and all of us have created. We have created these monsters, these young people with no respect, no boundaries for anything. They can do no wrong. They can disrespect anybody. They're entitled. Let's watch this. This is towards the end of the Bucks loss to the Indiana Pacers. Let's watch Patrick Beverley in this interaction with Pacers fans.
But tonight, it appears, we don't know the circumstances, but it certainly appears he crossed the line.
Oh, he hit that lady in the head.
Throws a ball in the stands.
Hit that,
and then
he hit that
ball
lady
back, and he fires it back.
Oh, he gone. He gonna get suspended.
Yeah.
He hit that lady in the head.
That'll be next.
Obviously, he was trying to hit that guy. It don't matter who he was trying to hit.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can't hit no lady ever.
Yeah.
And then
you can't throw a ball at a fan.
I understand that. But, like, listen, I've done stupid stuff, and I got criticized. That's just wrong. He gonna get suspended for that. And that's gonna be a good one, too. Because he didn't do it once, he did it twice.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Don't expect that from a 35-year-old, 12-year veteran.
I don't expect that from an 18-year-old. That's just stupid.
So I give Charles credit for copping to his own indiscretions, because Charles Barkley, and again, I mostly like Charles. I don't like how he's pivoted a little bit and gone a little woke and backpedaled, but I like Charles Barkley. Charles Barkley spit on a fan. He was trying to spit on a man. I think he spit on a little girl. And it doesn't matter whether he was throwing that basketball at a man or a woman. Confronting fans in any capacity and not, oh my God, they were taunting us all game and it was breaking my concentration, or I don't have to put up with that harassment. Everybody's in this mentality that fans can't be fanatical anymore. Fans can't taunt the athletes because they're so fragile and they shouldn't have to put up with that. We see it across the board. Russell Westbrook, oh, I can't be called Westbrook. You're not going to disrespect my name like that. This thing has been building. We're at the 20-year anniversary of the Malice in the Palace. And to me, there's Patrick Beverley, he's 35, he's at the end of his career. I would sit him down for a year. Like, hey, Pat, we're good. You're 35 years old. You've been in the league a long time. We're good, dude. We're going to move on from Patrick Beverley. And I'm telling you, I don't dislike Patrick Beverley in general. But trust me, if David Stern were still running the league, and I don't think he was the best commissioner or the greatest commissioner or any of that, but at least he did know, like, hey, we're here to pleasure and serve the fans. And you guys are making millions of dollars playing a game. You're blessed. You're lucky. you owe the fans. Again, if there is no fanaticism, you're not making millions of dollars. But these are the young people we have created. And so Patrick Beverly went to Twitter last night and tweeted out, not fair at all. Exchange between a fan and our ball club all night. We warned and asked for help all night. Not fair. That was him responding to someone that put out the video of him and doing this deal. He had an excuse. And then he comes back, but I have to be better, and I will. He had an excuse. He thinks to some degree, hey, they're harassing us all game. I have a right to throw a ball at them. But here's what really has blown my mind. That the bigger story for many people in the media, it's not about Patrick Beverly getting into it with a fan and doing something completely inappropriate with fans, the paying customers, the reason why the media have a job, the reason why the athletes have a job. Oh, what really happened was the crime that transpired between Patrick Beverly and a female reporter slash producer, Melinda Adams. Let's play Patrick Beverly's post-game exchange between Melinda Adams and himself.
Here.
Oh, excuse me, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Before I offend.
Yeah.
You subscribe to my pod?
Do I subscribe to you? I do not subscribe.
So you can't interview me then?
Okay.
No disrespect.
Well, Jamal is here.
You subscribe? Okay, cool.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Again, there were a couple times within a bucket or two. In previous games, y'all have been able to kind of get over that hump. Or maybe. Was it anything they did in particular, or was it just one of those where the bucket didn't go down, there wasn't the stop, they made one? What kind of prevented that you all from being able to get over, kind of like you have in the past?
You'll move that mic, please, or just get out the circle, please, for me, please, ma'am. If you're not subscribed to my pod, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Now, trust me, that woman made a mistake. Should have never left. But I get why. She folded. Some dude is being intimidating, threatening her. She folded. Didn't want to be a distraction. Let everybody else get their questions in to Patrick Beverly. I get it. She shouldn't have left. She's in the wrong. She should have stood her ground. But I'm not criticizing her, but by leaning into a little victimhood and leaving here, the troops have all rallied around her. And so I'm not defending Patrick Beverly in this scenario. But this is nothing. This is nothing. An athlete, a source, a coach, an executive getting upset with a reporter and saying, hey, I'm not talking to you, and get your microphone out of my face. This is nothing. And trust me, I know that, you know, at one time I used to be big and really strong, particularly for a reporter and all this. But I've had athletes swing on me. I've had athletes threaten to kill me. I've had athletes, big name athletes, and I've talked about it here on the show, but it doesn't matter whether it's Lawrence Taylor, Marcus Allen, Andre Rison, Tracy Simeon. It doesn't matter who it was. That's the price of doing business as a journalist. This is nothing, what happened to this woman. Nothing. And trust me, reporters a lot smaller and a lot less able back then to protect themselves have put up with far more than that. Athletes have fought with reporters. Wayne Simeon, I've told the story, linebacker, and this dude was dangerous. That dude jumped across tables trying to get to me at Diamond Joe's Strip Club in Kansas City, Missouri, and was ready to kill me or take his best shots. I didn't whine about it. And I'm not saying that someone has a right to get physical with this woman or whatever, but I'm just saying, this is what goes on. This was nothing. We're nothing as the media. We have to put up with that from athletes. They need to be allowed to vent their frustrations if they don't like something we wrote or something we said or whatever his problem is that day. She should have stood her ground and everybody should move on from this. But instead, everybody's throwing a big sympathy party for Melinda Adams, and we're downplaying the real problem, which is his treatment of fans. We've created these little monsters. We've coddled and pampered and told these guys they can do no wrong, and so they think they can do no wrong. And so that's why, because we are allowing it to go on with fans, because we allow Russell Westbrook to run wild and smear fans constantly, we're sitting here shocked like, oh, he's going to start mistreating Melinda Adams and other reporters. If you would do your job and hold them accountable for the abuse they're giving on fans, they wouldn't turn around and then abuse you in the media. I want to read Melinda Adams' tweet. And I'm not trying to drag Melinda. I'm about to drag these other people that are all caping up for her. I want to thank everyone for their kind words and support. I am humbled. Patrick Beverly just called me and apologized. I appreciate it and accept it. The Bucks also reached out to apologize. I've been in news for over 40 years and kindness and grace always win. Now I'm telling you, again, I'm not comparing her to me, but I just want to tell you what standard operating procedure in sports journalism and just in journalism in general. We, the journalists, aren't that important. And if someone flies off the handle and threatens you or rude behavior towards you, you settle it behind the scenes or you move on from it. It's the price of admission. Running the social, oh God, I'm so humbled. Everybody's rallied around. And again, I know I'm not as sympathetic as her. But there was plenty of witnesses. I was in New York and Andre Rison wanted to square off with me. The Chiefs were playing the Giants. It was on TV. It was played on ESPN. No one rallied around me. I didn't look for anybody to rally around me. No one was sympathetic in the media. Andre Rison never apologized to me. It's no big deal. I was critical of Andre Rison pretty consistently during his time in Kansas City, and he had had enough, and he let off some steam and you know, wanted to square up in the Giants locker room. Price of admission. I'm not sitting here saying I'm a tough guy and I wanted to fight with Andre Rison. Keyshawn Johnson, I'm down in Tampa. They lose a playoff game or whatever. Keyshawn Johnson wanted some smoke with me. Particularly at that time, I mean, Keyshawn Johnson, 6'3", 240, muscled up. I mean, he's one of the biggest, thickest wide receivers in the world. If we had squared up, more than likely, my big fat butt would have got smoked. He threatened. He did his deal. I stood my ground. It's like, okay, I've lost fights before, whatever. But to make some big national case out of it, no one did that. No one cared. It's the price of admission. He just lost a tough game. He didn't like my line of questioning. I mean, literally, the first NFL game I ever covered as a journalist, I was working at the Bloomington Herald Times. Jeff George was there. Rookie quarterback or second-year quarterback at that time, like a rookie year, and they played the New York Giants. I believe this is in 1990. And Lawrence Taylor played the Giants and was Lawrence Taylor. And Lawrence Taylor hit Jeff and knocked him out of the game, and I was over asking Lawrence Taylor questions about it. And literally, almost the exact same thing. And the Giants won. I don't even know why Lawrence Taylor was upset. But literally, the exact same thing that happened to that woman happened to me. This is my first year out of college. First NFL game I ever covered. And Lawrence Taylor told me, hey, back that ass up, man. Get out of my face. It was nothing. But now everybody's running around. I want to read some of these tweets. Everybody's running around. Oh, God, Melinda Addison, Patrick Beverly, we got, oh, God, we, oh, he's got to apologize. Jim Trotter, who, you know, I like or used to be friendly with or whatever. I'm sure he doesn't like me anymore, but he works for The Athletic. You know, he's a tiny bit woke. But this type of unprofessionalism should not be tolerated by the Bucks, the NBA, or any sports league. Patrick Beverly should be ashamed of himself. It's just too much for me. I just can't. Oh. We're professional journalists, man. Let these athletes, again, I'm not saying they should get away with anything, but this is nothing. And any of us with any experience knows this is nothing. Here's Myron Metcalf. He is saying this to a producer who has helped so many of us at ESPN and beyond. He's rude and disrespectful, but that's just how he acts. What the hell has Patrick Beverly ever done to have inflated his ego? How does this help the Bucks organization? Subscribe to A Jump Shot. Nothing happened to this woman. This is standard operating procedure. And again, I know y'all want to turn everything into a safe space. Channing Frye. Everyone's seeing this. It's not cool or respectful at all. There needs to be a huge apology to the damn fan that got knocked upside the head. That's where the apology needs to go. That's where all the attention needs to go. But we've created these generations of Frankensteins, these millionaire athletes that have been coddled to no end. We got to cut it out. Do our jobs. We're supposed to speak for the voiceless, for the actual fans, not for ourselves. Oh my God, look what happened to us. Well, if you'd stop them from mistreating fans, from Russell Westbrook, let's play some of them clips. Russell Westbrook, confronting, and why am I done lost my place? Russell Westbrook, let's play SOT number 5. Here he is in the tunnel.
Watch your mouth. Take it like a man. Watch your mouth, motherfucker. Watch your mouth. Say it like that. Watch your mouth.
Talk about it. Be about it.
Westbrook. Woo!
That's Russell Westbrook. Confronting a fan who I think called him Westbrook. See, that's what we need to be speaking out against. Hey, leave them damn fans alone, man, and hit some shots. You want to be mad at me or Kendrick Perkins or Stephen A. Smith or Mike Wilbon or anybody in the media, and you want to yell and scream at us? Yeah, we're getting paid. And a lot of these, Stephen A.'s getting paid like $12 million, $13 million a year or whatever. Mike's making a penny. We're all making money. They want to yell and scream at us. But we run around and think like, oh, my God, a fan called Russell Westbrook. Westbrook. Oh, the horror. We're creating monsters, idiots, paid millions of dollars. They feel they're elite and can't be touched. Feel like they're smarter than anybody that's ever walked the planet or lived on the planet. And we wonder why we have the chaos and the dysfunction and the stupidity running wild. We wonder why we look at these college kids on campuses that are overtaking buildings. Oh, poor pro-Palestine, the oppressors. We created this. We've miseducated, misinformed, they're undiscipled, they've all been caught. Look at, and this wasn't a huge deal to me, but when he's the face of your league, when he's the biggest star in your league, when he sees himself, anoints himself King James, the chosen one, he can't be doing. And again, this wasn't a huge deal, but it's all connected. This is LeBron James last week. Some female fan sitting courtside gives him the old crybaby thing. And I didn't have a huge deal with this. But it is inappropriate. LeBron should be above it. They shouldn't be bickering with fans. And he shouldn't be, like, flinching and trying to scare a female fan sitting courtside. But he's been told he can do it. He's untouchable. All of these guys are. They're the elites. Play LeBron. Intimidating female fan here. She calls him crybaby. Emotional game. They're losing to the Nuggets. LeBron's all into it. I get it. That little flinch there, not saying it's a big deal, but he's the face of the league. He needs to be above fan hecklers. Maybe there's video. Maybe there's video from years ago of Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird getting into it with fans and doing that flinching, trying to scare fans. I think it's a new phenomenon. And again, when I say new phenomenon, what I'm basically saying, the last 25, 30 years, we've been so catering to young people. This is how the malice in the palace happened 20 years ago. Because the media and athletes have demonized the actual fans. They've demonized the actual people that pay their bills, that create the fanaticism that allow them to make all that money. I'm going to give you an analogy you will not like. I don't care. But it's the same way. Hey, let's demonize the MAGA crowd. Them working class rednecks that like Donald Trump. Them people that want their factory jobs back. Let's demonize them. Not the super powerful. Oh my God, can you believe people went to the White House on January 6th and tried to intimidate the politicians who make these policies and cut these deals that exploit the American people. You've been so brainwashed, you think that them white folks, working class white folks, that went to Washington, D.C. to tell the people with power, the politicians who have sold us out, they went to their offices and said, you know what? I want to have a word with you. I want you to fear me. You think that's your enemy. Them people that are making those laws, they're your actual enemies. Them people that are taking those checks from big tech, from foreign governments, from AIPAC, that's your actual enemies. Not them little crazy people that say, hey, I'm going to go up to the White House, I'm going to put a moose head on, I'm going to go to Nancy Pelosi's office and put my feet on her desk. They done thrown those people in prison, in jail. I've had Sarah McAbee on. Her husband sitting in a prison cell. He's a law enforcement person. Did nothing wrong on January 6th, and he's sitting in jail, and you have no sympathy for him because, oh, they're MAGA. Your whole mindset is wrong. Patrick Beverly and the millionaire athletes and the millionaire broadcasters that defend them, they're not on your side. They would just as soon spit on you, throw a basketball at you, than to do anything actually for you. Unless, now, you go out and disrespect the police and resist arrest as a career criminal, yes, they will come to your dead body's defense. So if you'd like to offer yourself up as a dead body, then yes, Patrick Beverly, NBA players, these elites, and the corporate media, they will defend you as long as you're outstretched cold on a stretcher, having defied the police, preferably a white police officer. Then yes, they will do something for you. But let's say you're a person that just wants to go to work, take care of your wife and kids, or your husband and kids, or whatever, your grandmama and kids, your mama and kids, and you just want to go to work and you don't plan on being dead and you don't plan on being shot by a cop, these people will do nothing for you. They don't want to be around you. They move to neighborhoods as far away from you as possible. And then they go to social media and pretend and lie to you. Hey, man, as long as they rain money on me, it's going to rain on you, too. Oh, man. This is so simplistic and so easy to see. Steve Kim, I'm sorry for making you wait this long. We're going to bring Steve Kim into the conversation. Have I done what I wanted to do? Have I? Yes, I have. So we'll bring Steve Kim. Before I do that, I want to cheer myself up a bit here and thank our very, very, very good friends at Preborn. We love Preborn. As Mother's Day approaches, I want to highlight for you an organization that cares so deeply for mothers, and that's Preborn. Preborn's network of clinics exists exclusively to offer love, life, and support to pregnant women who are feeling scared and alone and who are being pressured to make the ultimate choice, one that will not only sacrifice the life of their baby, but will also take a piece of their heart. When a distressed mother comes to Preborn, she's welcomed with open arms and is offered a free ultrasound to see and hear the precious life inside of her. And the majority of time, once that happens, she will choose life for her baby. This Mother's Day, you can help bring life to both a mother in need and an at-risk baby. One ultrasound is only $28. Five ultrasounds are $140. Every penny goes towards loving mothers and babies as well. And when you become a monthly sponsor, you will receive pictures and stories of lives you helped to save. To get involved, simply dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, keyword baby, or visit preborn.com/fearless. That's preborn.com/fearless. Steve Kim, just around the corner, next.
It's only a kick. A jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
There are voices and songs crying out for men to live up to their biblical responsibilities, to correct a corrupt and broken culture. We can no longer afford to ignore the tug on the heart that all good men hear and feel. We have lost our way, and we know it. We can see it in the eyes and actions of scared, frustrated, and confused children. Free speech? It's under attack. The meritocracy? It's been scrapped in the name of diversity, equity, and inclusion. Identity politics separates us by color. As we step further and further away from our identity in Christ, Satan steals the innocence of children. Join me.
We need courage, not perfection.
John Ridge.
You're the benefactor of the fact that the founding fathers recognized that's where your inalienable rights come from.
Glenn Beck.
You are the leaders of freedom and liberty in the world.
Mark Robinson.
Ain't but two genders.
Pastor E.W. Jackson.
But I owe my identity not to my race. I owe my identity to the Lord Jesus Christ.
And members of the Fearless Army in Nashville on Saturday, June 1st for Roll Call 2.0. Visit fearlessarmyrollcall.com to reserve your spot at the Men's Summit that will restore your faith and your resolve to fight. Since 2007, Folds of Honor has provided life-changing scholarships to the spouses and children of America's fallen or disabled in combat. And in 2023, this was extended to include the families of fallen first responders. They've awarded 51,000 scholarships and more than $200 million so far. And the need is still great, but together, we can make sure no qualified applicant is turned away. Flying Ace has aligned with Folds of Honor to ensure the children of our American heroes receive the education they deserve. As proud supporters of Folds of Honor, Flying Ace has had the privilege of providing hope for the families of those who protect our freedom. To that end, Flying Ace is proudly sponsoring four scholarships awarded quarterly this year. Please, if you can, donate today and help them make a great impact. Go to flyingacespirits.com or scan the QR code on the screen. The link is also in the show's notes. When you purchase a bottle of Flying Ace, you will also be donating to Folds of Honor. Make sure you use the promo code Whitlock and get free shipping on every order. That's flyingacespirits.com, promo code Whitlock. All right, welcome back. Steve, thanks for the patience. I apologize. I know you have learned to expect it, but I got off on one here on Patrick Beverley and these little bitty Frankenstein monsters we've created in the sports world. Steve, my takeaway, everybody's making a big deal. Patrick Beverley, oh, look at how he treated this reporter. I don't think what happened to the reporter is a big deal. I think what he did on the court throwing the basketball to fans twice, I think that's the big deal. And some people in the media are missing the point. Your thoughts?
Well, I'm with you. You know, one of these days, one of these NBA players is going to mess with some guy that just happens to be some five-time black belt jiu-jitsu or an MMA practitioner who just doesn't give two F's about anything. But Jason, the question I have in terms of the Beverly run-in or that altercation with that reporter, was the big problem that she was at a major outlet like ESPN and or that she was female? If this was just a regular old white guy from the local Times or daily paper, would there be this rallying cry against Patrick Beverley? To be honest, I mean, let's just be honest about it. It was a woman. She works for a major network. So all the cronies now gather up and say, oh, my God, I can't believe. Folks, I've read he's done this the whole time. To Patrick Beverley's credit, or to be fair, I heard that he does this to everybody and has been doing it for a while. And I'll be honest, I don't think it's the best way to get subscriptions to your podcast, but he is consistent.
Steve, I just went through a litany and I could sit here all day talking about all the different athletes who told me to, you know, kick rocks, cursed at me, threatened me. Handful took swings, whatever. And it literally started. I'm not exaggerating. The very first NFL game I graduated Ball State University in May of 1990. And I think in October of 1990 or September, I covered an Indianapolis Colts game that featured my high school friend and, you know, lifelong friend, Jeff George. Lawrence Taylor hit Jeff George, injured him, whatever. And I'm in there asking Lawrence Taylor questions, and he threatens me and basically tells me to get out of his effing face, no different than Melinda Adams. No one cared, and nor should anyone care. Yes, so her being a woman, her being connected to ESPN, and everybody's opportunity to virtue signal, look at me protect woman, hear me roar. That's what's driving all of this.
Yeah, and to give LT credit, I know how annoying you can be, but at least he didn't ask if he had subscribed to his podcast. The other thing that's really interesting, why didn't she just stay there? I know there was a time, especially in certain cities, whether it's Philadelphia or New York, you did that to one of these old crotchety old Fs. They would just stand there and say, no. No. Like, what do you, and then you walk, you make it a bigger story. I don't know if they wanted to go there. But speaking, this reminds me of one of the most famous blow-ups. when the early 90s Mets were one of the worst constructed teams and the personalities were bad, Bobby Bonilla, who was such a nice guy with the Pirates, became this really angry guy with the Mets. And there's this older black gentleman, I guess had written something, probably the truth, and there's a famous clip where Bobby just goes, "Yo, man, yeah, come at me. You know, we just chilling." I'm like, whoa, that's no way to treat Clifford Huxtable. He just wants to write a column. This used to be somewhat normal. People used to stand their ground. But Jason, we are now into 2024.
Steve, I'm sitting here thinking, you remember when Hal McCray was the manager of the Kansas City Royals?
Oh, with the
lost
phone.
It and,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, with the phone. And why can't I remember the guy from the Topeka Capital Journal who actually got hit, who, you know, I was friends with. Yeah,
got cut
or whatever. And that like, people, Will McDonough, remember? I can't remember who he got in a fight with on the Philadelphia Eagles.
Well, it was Raymond Claiborne from the Patriots. They got into a physical altercation in the locker room. And look, Will McDonough actually held his own from what I've read, which really, I start to wonder about the run support that Raymond Claiborne gave out there at cornerback. But I told this story before, but the great Doug Krikorian, one of my idols, who, by the way, big fan of the show, he says hello to you, has great respect for what you do. I've told you this. When he was like this renegade reporter, or I believe the Herald Examiner at the time, or the LA Times, he was the beat reporter for the Chuck Knox-led Rams. He literally got chased around the practice field by Isaiah Robertson, who was an all-pro linebacker. He got chased around.
Number 58, one of my favorite players.
Right, and I said to Doug over one of our dinners at Phil Traney's, I said, did he ever catch you? And he says, no, I was lucky. A couple of teammates grabbed him, but I was able to get away. And I said, well, maybe some of your criticisms were valid. Because if he couldn't catch you, Doug, he ain't catching O.J. Simpson.
So my contention, Steve, is like, if we were to hold athletes accountable for the way they continue to disrespect fans, they would be less likely to disrespect reporters. But we actually now, and I played the clip from 3 years ago when Doris Burke went off because Rajon Rondo got in the face of a fan, put his finger in the face of a fan, and the fan pushed it away, and Doris Burke, oh, my God, he touched the fan. I mean, the fan touched Rajon. Yeah, he should be escorted from the arena. And I'm just like, Russell Westbrook, anybody calls him Westbrook, he wants to get in their face, and we all think this is appropriate. These little thin-skinned athletes and Patrick Beverley saying last night, hey, the Pacers fans were harassing us all night, and we tried to get it to stop, and it's on security. Don't they understand we're elite millionaires, and you can't yell, you can't taunt us? It's so exhausting.
You know what would be great? If Patrick Beverley did that in Denver and threw the ball, and it hit the head of one of Nikola Jokic's brothers. Now that right there, because those are some serious guys. Those are serious. Yeah. I would pay pay-per-view. Whatever I'm paying this week for Canelo Munguia, I'd be like, you know, no. I want to see one of Jokic's brother against Beverly. Now that is pay-per-view worthy.
It's so funny you bring that up because the Jokic they're not afraid or intimidated. Nothing. All these studio gangsters running around in the NBA and in NBA arena, like, y'all know where I'm from.
Yeah.
You think? Anyway, let's move on. I want to move into your area of expertise. Your man, Ryan Garcia.
Wow.
Caught riding dirty, they're saying, with some PEDs. He's denying it. Let's play. And he's attacking our guy, Victor Conte. Let's play Ryan Garcia attacking Victor Conte over Ryan. Just had the big upset win over Devin Haney. Let's play Ryan talking about Victor Conte and denying he used PEDs.
What's up, everybody? I came on here to address this bull claim that I cheated.
Lies.
Yeah. Everybody knows that I don't cheat. What can I say, you know? Why didn't they come out with this before, you know, the fight? If they found it before, why would they let me step into the ring as a cheater and then come out with a victory, and then they post this, you know. Again, these are people that are trying to attack me for whatever reason, but no weapon against me shall prosper. I never taken a steroid. I don't even know where to get steroids at the end of the day. I barely, you know, take supplements. They're saying it's coming from the ashwagandha. That's retarded. So,
at the end lies. Of the
day, big lies. I beat his out of here. Everybody go to Warwick tonight. It's lit.
And I was with this guy every single day.
That's Ryan Garcia. No weapon formed against him.
Yeah,
shall man prosper. Of
God.
Let's hear from Victor Conte. What's he say?
Ryan Garcia has brought you into this, and he has somehow suggested that you are, in a way, behind his failing of these drug tests. I would love to get your response
to that. His conspiracy theory is completely wrong and debunked. I have nothing to do with this. I'm completely independent of VADA. More than a decade ago, when VADA first started, I was one of the first trainers, or whatever you choose to call me, sports nutritionist, that was referring my fighters, world champions. The first one was Nonito Donaire. This was back in 2012, and he did four fights, won three of those. He was tested by VADA. He won the Boxing Writer Association Fighter of the Year. So I have been sending my fighters, obviously because of my background, okay, and things that happened back in 2003, almost a decade later in 2012, it was a good idea. And I became an outspoken anti-doping advocate in 2005. So I refer my fighters to VADA. That's the extent, you know, of my relationship. Did I introduce Margaret Goodman and Flip Hamansky that run VADA? Two people like Dick Pound, who was the founding chairman of WADA, the World Anti-Doping Agency, and others that helped them be able to do the testing at WADA accredited labs. Yes, I made some introductions, but nothing more than that.
So you are not behind Ryan Garcia's positive.
I am not behind Ryan Garcia's positive drug test. It's foolish for him to say that. There's absolutely no evidence whatsoever to lend any credence to whatever he's saying.
Steve Kim, your thoughts on all of this?
Okay. Well, first of all, it's great to see Victor. And by the way, he'll be a special guest of Mario Lopez and I on the Three Knockdown Rule on Monday. He'll get more into this. Victor Conte, he taught me something years ago. He said, Steve, you know what the first thing you become as you make the transition into being a drug cheat? And I said, no. And he said, a liar. And Jason, having covered many of these stories, I've never actually had or actually heard someone say when they get busted, okay, yeah, you got me. I did it. Straight cold busted. Guilty as charged. No. But what's going on here is almost like the boxing version of the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. Because of Victor Conte and Snacks association with Devin Haney, and then like you'd outlined his help or his consultation with VADA, now everything comes back to the sinister head of Balco, right? But here's the truth. The bottom line is VADA is independent here. In fact, they were contracted by Golden Boy Promotions, from what I understand. And what is not being talked about enough, Jason, is the fact it's not just Osterine that is being that was detected in the body or the system of Ryan Garcia. There's another one, Nandrolone, or 19-Nandrolone. So it's two substances. And a strength and conditioning coach said, Steve, that right there, to me, closes the door on any doubt that he did something and he did it purposefully. Here's the other thing that really gets me is this. Team Garcia keep saying, well, how in the world could you test me the day before the fight, knowing that I tested positive, and then the night of, and now you come up with the news. This is why. These drug tests, which test for hundreds of various substances that are banned, they're on a list. It's not like a pregnancy test, Jason. It's not like you give over some sample of your blood or urine or your spit, and you have a little thing, and it's like, oh, it's a plus sign. Honey, we're pregnant. It doesn't work that way. Okay, so that right there needs to be debunked. The other thing is now he's saying that because I showed up and I shadow boxed for Trump, that the elites are out to get me. Ryan, it's boxing. Not enough people care. And by the way, there have been other athletes in the MMA world that have had very good relationships with Donald Trump. They have all passed their drug tests. And then what I find most distasteful, and I know this hits home with you, now he's a man of God because no weapon shall prosper. Give me a break. Give me a break. Look, the genius of Ryan Garcia is fooling a bunch of dumb people in a very stupid country right now into following him, and they have this blind faith and loyalty towards him. That's the genius of Ryan Garcia.
That's fascinating and interesting. So in the boxing world, start with Steve Kim, speculate about the rest of the boxing world. Does this delegitimize his win over Haney?
There's no doubt. First of all, he says, I follow the rules. Jason, he didn't follow the rules when he purposely blew off the last 3 pounds. That alone. So, I mean, think about this. Not only did he purposely blow off the 3 pounds to gain a physical advantage, then he took PEDs. Think about that. I've seen cases like this where it's one or the other. Never when you stack them both. The word that comes to mind, I say what you want, is premeditated. So, I look, you use these substances for a reason. They work. If there was something I could take right now to turn all my hair the same color instead of this awkward face, I'd take it right now. And you know what? I wouldn't deny it. There's a difference, okay? The other thing is, yeah, there's an asterisk by that win, and the test is the test. Now, the sample B will now be tested. People have to realize the sample A and the sample B come from the same lot, okay? I think that there's a little bit of a misunderstanding. So with that being said, I don't believe this will hurt Ryan Garcia. This is what I think is going to happen. The result of the fight will most likely be changed to a no contest, which means technically Devin Haney is still the champion, which he was because the other guy didn't make weight, and he'll be undefeated still, even though we saw what we saw. The precedent has been in situations like this, these fighters generally get about 6 months to a year, although I have seen longer suspensions. Jason, in an era where fighters only fight twice a year or once every 6 to 8 months, this is like in baseball. A starting pitcher beans a guy on purpose, throws a couple of knockdown pitches, gets suspended for 5 games. It's basically a starting pitcher getting suspended for a start. It really, and here's the other thing. Because of his popularity and the fact that he has a lot of blind followers, Ryan Garcia's economics, I don't believe, will be impacted by this.
Is there interest in a rematch, though, now? Will that make a money? Will that make money?
It would, because of the storylines involved and everything surrounding it. But I did see an interview that Devin Haney was on ESPN, I believe, late last night or early this morning. He has said, and again, he could change his mind, money talks, everyone has their price, that I'm inclined not to go for the rematch because he's a cheat. Now, here's the unfortunate part. No matter what you think of Devin Haney, yes, they sold out. They should have made a harder stand. They did not ask for a morning of weigh-in or rehydration cap, something that some of his team members wanted, but they were so confident, specifically the father, Bill Haney, who's the manager trainer. They did this to themselves. They kind of sold out here. But here's the reality that's very unfortunate. In boxing, Jason, every training camp, every sparring session, and every fight takes something out of you. There's a thing called erosion. And the punishment that he took on that night a couple of weeks ago, whether it was tainted or not, or no matter what the circumstances were behind it, he has to live with it. That fight may leave him a different being than when he came into that ring at the Barclays Center.
Steve, I want to move on. Stephen A. Smith, is into a little spat with Jonathan Papelbon. He's in the baseball world. Stephen A. taking smoke. Stephen A. did a segment dissing Mike Trout and saying, you know, he's too injured, and how could he get injured in, you know, a sport like baseball, where there's not, you know, much contact or whatever. And then Jonathan Papelbon kind of opened up a can on Stephen A. Smith, and I want your reaction. Let's play Papelbon.
When I was in Philly, okay, and Kratz, I think this was probably after you got there. When I was in the Philadelphia clubhouse, we had a traveling secretary, Frank the Tank. You remember Frank, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I got this conversation with him about Stephen A. Smith one day. And I said, well, how come he never comes in the clubhouse anymore? And he says to me, he says, oh, no, we had to kick him out of the clubhouse. I said, oh, really? I said, y'all kicked him out of the clubhouse. I said, well, why did y'all kick him out of the clubhouse? And he proceeds to tell me that he was doing all kind of shady shit, like going through the manager's office. And when he wasn't in there, going through the training room, pulling out reports in all kind of places he shouldn't have been. Oh, so for me, I've always looked at this guy like a complete joke. And really, it's just real shady guy. Like, when you get kicked out of a major league clubhouse, that means that you should never be able to be a journalist ever again. Well, I don't really call him a journalist. I call him more of an analyst, because you know what? If you're an analyst, you know what you study, right?
Did he say analyst or analyst?
No, he said analyst.
Yeah, that's what I figured. Okay, I'll just thinking of the sound here. Okay.
He said okay. Analyst.
Analyst.
Okay. Fair criticism, or did Papelbon go too far?
Boy, first of all, Stephen A. Sleuth, or Sleuth A. Smith. So this guy's literally going through file cabinets and going through that takes some guts. That takes a lot of guts. If it's true, again, this is alleged, I guess, but there is a reason why he got kicked off. I think it's fair. Yeah, if you breach the privacy and you go into areas where you're not authorized and you go through people's privates, whether it's files, computers, any papers, that's dirty pool. You're going way beyond what is fair. But I will say this. If that meant Stephen A. Smith got to watch less baseball, maybe he came out ahead. Lucky him. Yeah, I said it.
Probably
I played baseball.
Yeah, I Papelbon's passing on secondhand information. Not that, you know, I do think he's right in that, hey, Stephen A. Smith shouldn't be taken seriously. But anytime you start passing along gossip and things you heard, it's kind of high risk and undermines the credibility of the accusations. I can't see Stephen A. Smith hunting through private documents inside of a baseball locker room, but who knows? Maybe, I don't know. Stephen A. doesn't have much ethics. He's willing to write books and a fictional narrative about himself. So I guess, you know, he's potentially capable of it. But I'm not going to go too far with this. I do love Stephen Analyst Smith. I do love that. Stephen Analyst. Don't know if it's better than Stephen A. Myth, but I like it.
I will criticize the sleuth for this. I get it. Baseball's not football. It's not even basketball. Certainly not hockey. But as someone that did actually play baseball all the way up to high school, it's a grind. You're playing 162 games in less than 180 days, and you're doing that with travel. I remember in high school, Montebello, I think it was my junior year, we played in a tournament during spring break, and we had to play like four games in a row. Jason, I'm a kid that loved baseball at the time, and you're thinking you get to play the game of your life, all this stuff. By the fourth day, I understood, like, wow, this is actually a grind. It becomes a job. And look, baseball, there's a lot of repetitive movement. You're still on your feet. I know there's a lot of standing. But you still have to do some athletic things. And again, 162 games. And generally, there is not load management. The best players are expected to play at least 150 times a year. They're not all going to be Cal Ripken or Steve Garvey, but you add in the grind and the length of the season. Again, I will say that I think Stephen A. Smith should have a little bit better understanding of what an athlete goes through.
Steve, you've done your job this week. Hats off to you. Great job. You stuck the landing. Hopefully when we see you back next week, you'll be back to dyeing your hair. I'm still not comfortable with this gray streak.
Hold on.
But
wait a minute. I'm already into it. You can't go back now. No, Jason. Once I've already... Jay, I'm going to give this till the end of the month or June. This has become a hot topic on Twitter. I'm getting Pepe Le Pew memes and all this other stuff. But right now, I got the Jimmy Johnson 1989 chrome bumper going. It's just got to kind of fill in a little bit. Stick with me, folks. We're awkward stage, though. I admit, awkward stage.
All right. That's Steve Kim. We're done with him. We'll play tomorrow. And tomorrow, we'll have a conversation about not me and Steve Kim, but Steve, myself, and Scap. We're going to talk about the future of the NBA. We're in a new era. Kevin Durant is out of the playoffs. LeBron James is out of the playoffs. Steph Curry is out of the playoffs. NBA's unveiling a whole brand new list of superstars in the playoffs the rest of the season. We'll talk about that, and we'll talk about Darvin Ham being fired as the Lakers coach. We'll get into that Saturday morning. So we got some weekend content coming for you. I think on Sunday we'll have a show. I got a very interesting conversation about Deion Sanders and Mike Farrell, one of the foremost authorities on college football and recruiting. Stay tuned for all that. We'll see you tomorrow.